Reggie, I've been thinking a lot about leadership in the church. As I'm leading my congregation, we're at this time, we're doing drive-in church. Yeah. We're doing a lot more online, doing stuff through the mail. I feel kind of disconnected from my people. And I'm tired, and I'm talking to a lot of pastors that are like me, on the verge of burnout because it's just so different. But I think when we have the kind of conversations what we're talking about, there's a tendency to have burnout. You know, there's a tendency to be pushing the envelope, to be meeting a lot of resistance. And I've noticed a trend in some of your writings that you keep coming back to this theme of leadership and this understanding that to make the shift we're talking about from church-centered to kingdom-centered takes a certain amount of leadership. And a lot of us weren't trained to do it in seminary. And a lot of us don't know how to replicate that in our people so that they become leaders and share that leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dive in a little bit to what it takes to be the kind of leader to make those shifts we're talking about. And how do you create leaders to help support in that? It's not easy to, it's much easier to lead what it has always been.
Yeah.
Than make the changes we're talking about.
Well, I heard about four or five questions in that, in your comments. Let me start with one that jumped out at me, and that's the whole notion of tired. And maybe make some suggestions there. You know, most pastors are wired as responders,
mm-hmm.
and we respond to people. And one of the things that keeps us going is as we're serving people to get the feedback and the encouragement that comes from that. Just the feedback, you know, and feeling connected. So in a time like this, where your connections are cut, you're still doing the service,
yeah.
But you're not getting the feedback. The feedback loop's not there, mm-hmm. at near the level, you know, that you're used to. So I think that contributes to our compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were going to suggest, and that's a real thing, by the way. I mean, there are people that study this, who. For instance, after disasters, when people rush in, and COVID was a disaster. We all went into disaster relief, mm-hmm. suddenly. We felt the pressure of all that, but then we also had to deliver services to people. We weren't passing out water, but we figured out how do we pass out the sermon and, you know, in church, yeah. stuff. And the people who study this talk about the need for frequent breaks. And I think when you're not getting feedback, since so many pastors are wired to please people through their service, we don't know when to quit, but we're still pumping it out,
mm-hmm.
you know, just because that's what we're still trying to, in some ways, sometimes even generate some kind of feedback. I'm telling you, when every day is Groundhog Day, you got to take some breaks,
yeah.
and more frequent, and do stuff in the break. And I know when you're on lockdown and all that, but the country's coming back alive. There are opportunities. You know, do stuff with your family, do stuff with friends, do something different. You know that you know, because that will rest your spirit, and do it more frequently. Hey, nobody's going by the office right now to check on you. You know, so, I mean, you're not mm-hmm. having to turn in a time slip on this stuff. Do something that nurtures your soul for fun. And that, as practical as that sounds, I just find a lot of pastors won't do it. And it's to your own depth. Don't look for one day off. You know, just figure two half days in. Take a Sabbath, I mean, for crying out loud. You know, so I know in my own life, there's some similarities to burnout and compassion fatigue. They're different because you can recover quicker from compassion fatigue just with some time off and some of the stuff that I'm talking about. Now, burnout is a little more entrenched deal. And you can get there following the path of compassion fatigue if you don't take care of yourself. But even in burnout, I found I had to change, because I went through a period of, it was not a great moral failure. I'm too afraid of Kathy for that. You know, she's promised certain surgical procedures if I, but and she always keeps her word. But the truth is, mine was just a low slide, a long slide into gray. Mm-hmm. And so I had to do some different things physically. I had to take charge of my physical body. I had to learn how to take Sabbath. No one had ever told me that. And right now it's hard for you to find Sabbath.
Yeah.
In a COVID world, but you better find it, because you really need it. I'm saying you, but I'm going to say the pastors that you're in touch with and whoever.
And I think if you need help, get the help.
Totally.
Get a counselor. Totally. Talk to your doctor. There really are some
biochemical
things that come from
these
long slides. And I've experienced, a lot of pastors have experienced. Got to adjust.
And for me, it was more like, and I'm fixing to say something, I had to quit doing some things.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had to quit doing some things I like doing. See, this myth that you can do it all or everything. I mean, I had to, for instance, I was teaching out at the college, you know, one night a week. Well, that doesn't sound like, but there's the preparation for that. There's mm-hmm. the night out at the college. There's the stuff, you know, the test grading, you know, stuff like that. And although I saw it as a great outreach, and people did come to the church from my teaching, you know, out there. I met people, and it was great, and I loved it. I love to teach. But I found out I have to give up something I like doing. You know, you can't. These are hard choices sometimes, just to create the margin in our lives for emotional well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So, get the help. Quit doing some stuff. Create margin. Take charge of your body. And even though I joke a lot about my, you know, I still do that. You know, as bad off as I am, I'm not as bad as I was. And you have to do that. Find the stuff that feeds you. And rekindle friendships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, you've been doing this series with Chris. I mean, that friendship means a lot. That gives you a lot of nurture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find too many pastors, they've not developed friends.
Yeah.
Heck, if I didn't have a friend, I was Google friend, and I would, you know, stop what you're doing, you know, find a friend, you know, pay somebody to be your friend if you need to. But I mean, you can't do this by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time to do it. And my friends got me through tough times.
Mm-hmm.
Without exception. Friends. Some of them were actually in my church. So that old thing, you can't have friends in church, I don't believe that. Some of them were, I mean, I was there 11 years, and some of my best friends are still there. But even while I was there, they were my friends. Mm-hmm. They believe, yeah, you can do that. But I had some pastor friends, too, who understood. You know, it's interesting, too, though. The friends in the church were guys, that, you know, the men, but they were men that had a lot of responsibility. They could get your sense of responsibility. They appreciated that. Many mm-hmm. of them were, you know, one of them was a doc, one's was head of the university, one college, one, it's a tough job. Another was CFO of a Fortune 500 company. I mean, these are people with a lot of responsibility. They understand leadership and the leadership challenges. They can be friends.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think pastors are intimidated from building relationships with folks like that, but they can understand your leadership challenges.
Yes. I think sometimes we as pastors slide into the pastor role. Yeah. That's safe. I can control that. And that's how I'm used to it. It's why I think a lot of pastors, when they retire, they don't know what to do.
Yeah. Their total personhood is bound up in that role.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's much easier for God to turn somebody into a pastor than to turn somebody into a person. I mean, you know, yeah. I referenced this in one of our earlier episodes here. I mean, becoming a person's a hard, and he'll use the pastor responsibility to do it, but make no mistake, we get to heaven and we're in eternity, you know, this clergy laity distinction will hardly mean like, but you becoming a person is still the main deal. And so whatever your assignment in life, whatever God's call on your life is, it's to help you become the person he has in mind. So don't give up on you. Don't just be a pastor and say, oh, I'm just doing that. It's a live deception. And don't let it kill you. If it's killing you, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't God's plan. He decided you to be a pastor to bring life to you, not to take it away.
Yeah.
And don't die for the church, for crying out loud. Jesus took care of that. You know, you don't need to.
And I think I've known pastors who are second career pastors. I think we need to have a lot more grace for people who are first career pastors. Mm. I think there's plenty of people out there that are a pastor. They did something else and now they're pastors. Why can't the work reverse? I think some pastors, you get called to that for a little while and maybe you get called to something else and that's okay.
You know what I think's going on there? And I don't talk about this a lot, but since you brought it up, you know, the life expectancy went up by, what, a couple decades in the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
People are living a whole heck of a lot longer than they were 100 years ago. And so, you know, my friend Bob Buford, who wrote Halftime. And, you know, what do you do with the second half of your life and all that? You know, I meet people that are coming out of business, going into ministry and leaving ministry, going into, you know, they're passing each other on the road. I think part of it is we're bored. I mean, you know, 40 years at one thing. You know, is not all of us can stay focused that long on one thing. And you're right. It's not abandoning the call. The call is to become you.
Yep.
We've turned it into the call is to be this or that. Those are functions. But the ultimate call on you is no different than the call on me, on the call of our wives, our children. Is to become, you know, the person God sees that we can be and had in mind. He's not going to ask you when you get to heaven, Jordan, why weren't you more like Moses? You know, he's going to say, Jordan, let's talk about how close to being Jordan you are. And,
You know? If pastors can't do that for themselves, that's going to be really hard to lead.
It's absolutely. If you don't believe that.
If I'm a function and I'm not a person.
Then we look at all our relationships as functionary.
Yeah.
See it all the time. And so then what happens is you don't trust people because you're not building relationships on authenticity. You're building it on transactions. So all of our relationships become transactional. Mm. And there's no joy in that. There's no soul nurture in that. Then you're always thinking, what do I need to do for Cliff? Because he was nice to me last week. You know, they took us to dinner. What kind of... Oh, man, that's a killer. It is a killer.
Yeah. Well, and that's how you burn out so quick.
Absolutely.
Because you can't do that long term.
No.
And one of the things I try to tell my church, I don't always live this real well, but it's I want to have a long-term view. Like one of the best things I can do for you is be the healthiest version of me that I can be.
Right.
That means I do need to rest. It means I do need to read and study and invest in myself in some ways. But so many pastors, we're talking about pastors, but leaders too. So many of our church leaders aren't investing in themselves the same way that they could be, should be, we should be leading them to be.
Yeah, one of the more challenging men's group that I belong to had some of those men that I've told you about, but, you know, the head of a government agency, you know, these were all high octane, top of the heap leaders, you know, they'd climb their ladder. And that was a particularly challenging year that I spent with. I always had a group of men that I was meeting with as pastor, and just for discipling, mentoring, and developing relationships, you know. And that particular group, you know, I found out they were playing harder on their day off, you know, than they were the rest of the time. Some of them because the adrenaline addiction that was so gripped their lives. And this happens to pastors as well. Yeah. You know, when you come off of that, it doesn't feel great.
Yeah.
I remember I took a sabbatical of a few weeks. One time, the first 3 weeks, I felt like crap, you know, because all of that adrenaline-based, you know, and gosh, I can remember early on in ministry, many Fridays was my day off, and there were a lot of Fridays, you know, by about late in the morning, Kathy said, I think you'll need to go on up to the office. I think you'll be happier, and I will be too, you know, I mean, because I didn't know how to handle coming off of the adrenaline, and I was just miserable, you know, and Arch Hart, a friend of mine who's at Fuller, a dean of psychology, wrote a great little book that really helped save me. I mean, it was on adrenaline. He coined the term adrenaline addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wrote Dealing with Depression in the Ministry and Other Healing Professions. And Arch just fingered the fact that as leaders, we're dealing with he said surviving ministry is a matter of surviving depression. He said because you're dealing with so much grief, you're helping people with their grief, but you don't have your own sense of loss, you know, and all the time. So you're doubling up on this. And so, you know, figure out ways to take emotional dumps, you know, really just get it out of your system.
Yeah.
You can't live like that. And living that out in front of you, and you can't complain to your folks from the point, they don't hear that. I mean, their lives are kind of, you know, so you've got to find healthy ways to do it, or else it does eke out in front of your folks. And then I've got this image of, you know, the pastor slumped over the pulpit saying, follow Jesus is the only way. And, you know, boy, people want to sign up for that, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, wait a minute, God pulled a fast one on me.
It is so tricky to handle those things in front of the congregation.
Oh, yeah.
I'm preaching the Sermon on the Mount, and this past week I preached on don't be anxious. And I did. I broke down a little bit in the sermon and just said, I've been really struggling with this one.
Uh-huh.
And I just sort of named it. And not to try to get extra sympathy or whatever. But so there's like the need to be human. But some people do. They use their pulpit as their counseling session.
It's not appropriate. The occasional thing like that just is authentic. And I can remember coming out of my burnout, God told me, because this was not a public thing. I was struggling with it behind the scenes. But I can take you to the spot where God said, you need to tell the folks what's up. And I argued with him for a good long while because I did not want to come across as not having it together. But that's probably the most powerful.
Yeah.
Because I didn't bleed on them every week, that one time of just saying, I got to tell y'all.
Yeah.
You know,
I had a couple people after Sunday. It's hard because we're doing driving. I don't see everybody.
Right.
But I did. I had a couple people Sunday. You know, thanks for doing that. Because we're all. And right now is one of those interesting times where we're sort of all in the same boat.
Soup together. Yeah.
And so it was an easy time to acknowledge it because we're all there.
The only person that got upset with me about that sermon was a guy who needed me to be perfect.
Yeah.
Well, he's got issues. That's not my issue. That's his. And I will tell you that, and I'm assuming this conversation, because it's tilted toward pastors, you're using it with your pastor friends, but you've got to figure out, as a pastor, you know, how much you can actually spend on people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this sounds, but there are some people who, if you spend 40 hours a week on them, solely, it still won't be enough.
Yeah.
I mean, there are folks that are just black holes when it comes to, you know, that, and you can wear yourself out.
And then you never get to some of these larger cultural shifts,
right,
that we're having, you know, that's the always the balance is I'm pastoring the direction of my church, and I'm trying to have this kingdom focus, mm-hmm. and I'm doing funerals, and mm-hmm. I'm doing sermons, and so there's this a maneuvering that you, it's a delicate balance.
You know, one thing that if I could help pastors with work-wise, we went into this thing to help people. And then we wake up and realize we're in the sermon production industry. Guess what? I mean, that's not been true for the church throughout its 2,000-year mm-hmm. cycle. That's particularly a post-Reformation, you know, phenomenon that we've kept going on. You spend less time on sermons.
Mm.
I mean, we think that's what we're supposed to deliver to the world, and that's going to save the world. I'm not saying preaching is unimportant, but you know what? We can lighten our load there. I was talking with a group of guys in Central PA, and it was a millennial that asked the question. It's so obvious. And he said, you know, why are we all sitting around still in our caves, all coming up with individual sermons to pipe out here while we're in? He said, why don't we work together on some stuff and you know, let's collaborate on messages. And you know, and I'm thinking, what a great idea. Why not use more interviews? You know, instead mm-hmm. of coming up with 28 minutes of content that's delivered one way. You know, think of ways that your yeah. sermons will be more interesting, first of yeah. all, if you did both of those things, and both of those things could help you save some time.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things we were saying off camera earlier is just how much what we currently do in church is not, it's not that it's not oriented to what we're talking about. It's antithetical
yes,
to
it keeps you from the getting kingdom. To, yes. I mean, where in the Bible does it say you got to preach a sermon every Sunday?
And there's, you got to be in rows.
Yeah. I mean,
and we have the whole thing set up like a consumer yes, mentality.
Totally. And that did come out of the third information revolution, where you yeah. now have the smartest person in the room need to tell somebody what you know. Got a Bible, you've got a personal Bible, because people couldn't do their personal, but they were Bible readers, they couldn't read, and they didn't have a Bible. So they couldn't be good Christians, you know. I mean, so it's up to us to, you know, live that out for them. Oh, man, it just goes on and on. And it's like we were talking off camera, too, about, I mean, we operate church so much like going to the gym and watching the trainer work out, thinking that that's really developing us. You know, you're not the trainer for everybody. And how do we help people participate, as I've said, in their own recovery, get their own skin in the game?
Yeah.
And you just can't drag people, you know, where yeah. they don't want
to go. So the pastor scorecard has to change.
Totally.
You know, instead of what can I produce, I've got to start scoring who's growing, who's finding their own place in the kingdom.
One of the things that helped me in burnout is to finally realize it was investing in lives that was that's eternal. Mm. And that's when I started. I always had a small group after that point in time. And that nourished me just to nourish them. I mean, that's the reciprocity of kingdom dynamic. That's because, but if you're just giving to the man mm-hmm. all the time, and it kind of in general, but not in particular, no, it's that in particular that
yeah.
really gives you some juice.
Yeah,
and that's forever too. Can't take that away from folks. Those are gifts.
Yeah,
you're making into their lives that matter forever.
Yeah, and I've been struck by how many people do not remember my sermons.
Yeah, well, but heck, I couldn't.
Yeah, I don't remember all my sermons. That's right. But yeah, those more eternal, on the ground, life to life, kingdom right. things. That's the real value. So there's a leadership that has to mm-hmm. take place to get there.
Yeah, I do think we were taught to be professors, you know, and now people can get much better information. I mean, they can listen to much better sermons than I ever, you know, as stunning as mine always were. Come on, let's get out of this game. I mean, let's get in the people development business and not the sermon development business.
Yeah. Well, and I would think that COVID is going to have an impact on that. Because as I've watched pastor friends try to go online, like, you're not Andy Stanley.
Exactly.
Like,
give it up.
Do you even want to get in that game? Exactly. You know, what is it? What is it? What are you really working at here?
And I promise you, we can be out-preached, but you can't be out-loved. And if you're pouring into people and you're helping the people in your community enjoy better lives like God wants them to, including your own folks, then, you know, you're going to, people are going to look for that and look after you, and you're not going to lose your job. Now, if you're trying to match the competency of some of these program whiz bangs, you could be in danger.
Yeah. Anything else from this leader? Because you said you heard a couple questions in my intro. Have we been hitting them, or anything else you want to add to thinking about leadership?
I will say that I think there are many things critical to a leadership culture, but chief among them, if you want leaders around you and not exile them, and there are pastors who exile leaders out of their midst, you know, but leaders, they do need vision. Now, it's not your job. Most pastors say, I'm not so good with that. I haven't gotten the tablets, you know, from the top of the mountain to come down. Vision bubbles up. It doesn't cascade down. You know, listen to listen to God. Pray with your... Learn to listen. I'll just say this about prayer because this really helps. I don't say much in prayer anymore. I mean, I grew up with the idea that prayer is God's gift to me so I could bring him up to speed. Is that stupid or what? Like, dear Lord, here's what's going on. You know, I upchuck all this stuff, and then I'm out there, and would you please hurry up and do something? And then I outline a couple of suggestions for him, you know, consult God on how he could best do this. Oh, that's so stupid. Prayer is God's gift to us to bring us up to speed. And, you know, because he's always coming back from where we're headed. I mean, when Moses sees God's back, you know, I mean, it's not because God wants to moon Moses. We don't ever see God come. We don't see God coming. We see him going. If you look in your own life, you look back across your life is where you see the foot. That's why footprints hangs on every Cracker Barrel wall in America. You know, I mean, you know, it's you see God in that. Look, well, we can learn to pray in a way that the future, which the kingdom is, the future is trying to invade the present. We can hear echoes of that kingdom and learn to listen. I try to listen. And one of the ways I listen to God is I replay the conversations I've had of the day, during the day. My quiet time's at night, because God's day begins at night, by the way. Evening and morning.
Morning,
the first day. Let's just get serious about this. Easter should never, listen, those sunrise services should never happen. I mean, Jesus was already gone by sunrise. We should have Easter midnight services. I mean, I can stay up for that because I'm kind of geared that way. I don't know how morning people got in charge of the church. Anyway, so, so I rehearse the conversations of the day. I rehearse the emails of the day. What is God speaking through that? Because he's speaking through all that. You know, and what have I seen? What have I encountered? And I'll tell you, and if you can begin to feel what God's up to, and I'll give you the biblical basis for this if you need it, so it just doesn't sound like New Age crystals or something. You know, so, I mean, the fig tree. This is... The miracle of the fig tree is not that Jesus nuked a fig tree. I mean, you know, I grew up with this, you know, the withers of the fig. I'm going, wait a minute, you know, Jesus, there's nowhere else in the Bible Jesus is upset with nature. I mean, he calms the water. He does it. This is a kick the cat moment. I mean, he's had a busy. It's pastoral. It's a tough time, but I don't get it. Well, what happens is, I consulted a phycologist, and what you discover is not only should the tree not have had fruit, shouldn't have had leaves either. This tree was sick already. That's what drew his attention to it. He sees this tree that's so out of round. It's the tree's dying. The miracle of the whole story is that Jesus fast forwards the future. Because look what the disciples say in Mark and Matthew. They didn't say, you know, you've got fig tree. No, they said, how did the tree wither so quickly? I'm quoting King Jimmy now, so it's as accurate. And just like Paul wrote it, and Jesus wrote it. So how did that happen so quick? They knew the tree was dead too. And that made sense then, because in both accounts, there's this immediate, Jesus says, and if you agree, you can say to this mountain, go throw yourself in the sea. Or whatever you're asking for. Well, if the miracles, you've nuked a fig tree, then why would is this like, and you can do better stuff than this? No, the miracle fast forward in the future, Jesus says, you can participate in that too. Whatever those obstacles are that are in front of you, you can say, go throw yourself in the sea. That's an apocalyptic image as well. See, this is the end time coming. This is the future coming into our present. And I just think some of us need to pray more. And most of the time when I grew up hearing pray more, it meant, oh, Lord, like Luther, I got to, get up and pray 2 hours or whatever. I mean, pray more by talking less. Just listen. Mm-hmm. What is God trying to say? Mm-hmm. And try it out. I mean, there are times I've heard God say, I'm pretty sure I heard God say something he didn't say. But learn it, practice it. It'll nurture your soul and you'll have a vision for a future that then your leaders can rally around. It's bigger than you. They need something bigger than you. So if I were going to say, create the culture where people are called to something bigger than themselves. And you live it out too so they can see it.
Yeah. Yeah, you model it by living into it yourself.
Yeah. It's not about me. This is about... Yeah. Yeah.